Hey Freunde, dieser Podcast wird unterstützt von der Freikirchenbank in Bad Homburg. Wir durften als City Church im vergangenen Jahr eine Finanzierung erfolgreich umsetzen und dürfen jetzt in unserem eigenen Gebäude sein. Wenn du als Gemeinde, als Freikirche oder als christliche Organisation ein Projekt hast, dann ist die Freikirchenbank ein genialer Partner, ein super Partner, der dir hilft in der Planung, in der Umsetzung mit viel Erfahrung, mit einem großen Netzwerk, Gottes Auftrag zu erfüllen, und sie reichen dir die Hand dabei, diese Schritte umzusetzen, und wir sind wirklich begeistert davon, mit ihnen zusammen unterwegs zu sein.
Herzlich willkommen hier in dieser Runde. Wir sind hier in Karlsruhe bei der Willow Creek Konferenz und herzlich willkommen bei Let's Grab a Coffee, unserem Leadership Podcast, und wir dürfen das heute hier in einem Raum haben mit lauter Influencern. Nina Streh aus Bochum ist mit dabei und wir switchen gleich in Englisch. Wir haben einen super Gast, den großen Podcast Papa würde ich ihn nennen, was das Thema Leadership angeht. Carrie Newhoff, welcome to our podcast today and to this round here. And it's a privilege for us to have you.
It's a joy to be with you.
We just hear a lot of people listen to you, not only in Canada, not only in the US, also in Europe and Romania and other countries. So welcome. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Thank
yes.
you
both. And it's so good to learn from you. I told this morning on stage, I listened to you like it's the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, and Carrie Newhoff.
That's dangerous, but
it's dangerous. No, not really. But it's you have so many good podcasts out there. You have one million a year, I think.
Yeah, it's about, I don't know. It's like 33 million and counting downloads.
Wow. So. And you ranked like 1% in the highest podcast worldwide or US?
Globally.
Yeah. Wow.
I think in the US it's top 0.1% and globally it's something similar.
Yes. And you have like Greg Rochelle and Simon Sinek and mm-hmm. all these people where we look to and learn from. And you learn from them. And what I like when I'm listening to you, it's like I feel there's a student who loves to learn from these guys and to just listen. And I can sit beside this and sneak in. And it's for me, it's all the time fun and very helpful.
So thank you very much. That is the plan. I mean, I'm there on behalf of everybody who listens. And I found that's one of the reasons I launched the podcast almost 10 years ago now, is I was starting to have those conversations and I always felt like, oh, I wish, you know, our elders could have heard this or our staff could have, yes. and I wish everybody could have heard this. And now I get to do this by bringing everybody in on those conversations.
Yeah. Do you have a funny story with the podcast? Like something messed up and it was
something
like...
Messed up.
Something secret.
My old boss, I totally lost an interview once at North Point. I went, not with Andy Stanley, but with Lane Jones. And fortunately, we were good enough friends that I could just call him up and say, totally lost the interview, can we do it again? And so that happened once. What else has happened? You know, you caught me off guard. I don't know that there's a lot of funny things that have happened. Sometimes it's very difficult if someone is promoting a book to throw them off script. So I have, I think I can say this here, but you know Horst Schultz. Mm. And he was doing a long interview, long day of interviews.
Yes, and it was most German accent in English
as
ever.
German as like German
me,
gets.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's wonderful. And I could tell it was the end of a long day. And I thought, how can I really capture the essence of Horst? And so I said, Horst, you know, you're not running the Ritz-Carlton or a hotel day to day anymore, but any time when you're going out for dinner to a hotel, is there anything that makes you angry? And he said, oh, and then he got into it and he goes, my wife doesn't even want to be with me anymore when I'm out because he delivered this wrong and he didn't do this right and the chicken was cold. And I'm like, okay, now I got him. And so often I find if a guest is like tired at the end of a day, if you can ask an emotional question, then all of a sudden they're present and they're fully there.
Yeah.
Okay, so are you tired?
I was. So you gotta ask me a tough one right off the bat.
Right.
Yeah, no,
I mean,
it's been a long day. Yeah. Been a long day, but I had a little break after lunch and got all packed up. We're leaving right for the airport after this interview, and I may have had a little nap, so I'm fueled and ready to go.
Good on you.
Yeah.
So you first in your first life you were a lawyer, right?
Yeah.
And then you became a pastor, was the founding pastor of Connexus.
We made up the word, yeah. No problem.
Connexus. Yeah. And then you changed you had to transition to another pastor and started this podcast. So what do you see with this podcast? I mean, in this room are a lot of influencers, people are listening to us. Podcast is like the new television or
yes.
the new book maybe, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. the news, I studied something. So what is your passion behind this, to do podcasts?
My passion was simply, it's a really cool format. Long form 9 years ago was not very common in the church. Mm. They were short. It was like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a lot of people talking into a microphone. Nothing wrong with that. But what really got me was the long interview. And I saw that being done in the thought leader space, in the business space. And I thought, could we bring that to the church space where I sort of get Craig Rochelle behind the scenes. Mm. I get Andy Stanley, not quite off the record. Everybody, you know, I try to honor my guests. I'm never trying to trap them. I want them to come back. Mm. I'm friends with a lot of the people that I'll have on the show or have become friends with them. And so I'm not out to get them because that's a way to get a bunch of quick views. But as the influencers would know, once the algorithm gets a hold of you, you get all the trolls and all the weirdos and all of that. So I'd rather just stay within my audience, be really happy. And I always ask the guest at the end of it, it's like, are you okay or do you want to cut anything out? Because if they would say something that's going to embarrass themselves yes. or be difficult, I don't want to be that person who does it. And not a lot, but I would say 1 in 20 interviews, we end up cutting something out. Or I'll say, doesn't happen as often, but like, oh, I don't know whether, because I could hear how somebody would take what they said and twist it against them. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, maybe we should redo that. But 9 out of 10 interviews are just uncut. Mm-hmm. Exactly what happened, no editing. Mm-hmm. People are always like, how much time do you spend editing your podcast? It's like zero.
Oh, wow.
Because we just let the unfiltered dialogue roll. Because if you were at dinner with, we'll pick on Craig because he has a German last name. Somebody said, do you know Craig Rochelle? I'm like, what? I'm like, Craig Rochelle. I'm like, I don't know him. And then I'm like, wait, oh, you mean Craig Rochelle. Oh, yeah. I don't know how they said it in German, but they Grosche. Said it the German way.
Grosche?
Grosche.
Grosche.
Wow. You hear that, Craig?
It sounds Swiss German. Right?
I don't know, man. So yeah. Anyway, I'm. But, you
how,
know.
How many people do you have on staff to do this podcast?
We're a really tiny team. So the podcast is me and a digital media director and a producer. That's it. Super simple.
I thought it's 100 people doing something.
No, it's super simple. Yeah. And that's one of the keys to scale for me is reproducibility. I realized when I was doing the podcast, because I'd been leading, I was maybe 49 when I launched it 10 years ago. Yeah, it would have been 49. I had a few laps in leadership, and I'm like, if this gets complicated, I was still leading the church at the time. I'm not going to be able to lead the church well. I'm probably going to get 8 episodes in, like most podcasters, and it's going to die on the floor because we didn't get an episode out. So 9.5 years into it, we've never missed a Tuesday. Mm. We've never missed a launch day.
Wow.
And basically what I do, my job is to cultivate the relationships, to do the interview.
Yeah.
Right. I throw it into Dropbox. And I don't touch it again until I do the intro extra, and then it shows up when you see it.
Wow.
So that's it. That's all I do. Wow. And then we have a producer who's produced every episode. Digital media director, a lot of intake. We get a lot of people who want to be on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
You know, they handle all that and screen it for me, etc. So it's low maintenance, and the tech is super simple. Because if it's complicated, it's going to break and I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
So right now we're redoing, when I get home, we're putting new lenses on the camera, new lights in the studio. We just repainted it really dark. Mm-hmm. It was super white and we painted it like this really dark green. So it looks good. My team tells me it looks good.
I can't see this on my ears. So
no, you can't see it.
I don't care. Which
yeah. And interestingly enough, we didn't, our first 200 or 300 episodes have no video,
yeah.
But then video became a big thing.
Yeah.
And so we launched a YouTube channel, but we'll still have 10 audio listens for every video watch this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you very much. So what we did is ask questions in this room. So
yeah.
You want to honor this. And what I want to start is like, I'm the church guy and she's the online guy, Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's fine.
Yeah. And I want to just start this question. Church is something, it's on my heart, it's on your heart, so many people. And sometimes we are concerned, we see church worldwide and we see mega churches falling down and big pastors and all this, what happens in the US, but not only in the US, worldwide. And it is shifting, but nobody knows. I remember Greg Rochelle said, I think it was on your podcast, I don't know where it goes, mm-hmm. goes to. And I was scared when Greg Rochelle doesn't know where the church goes to, who knows it? So what do you think when you would say you see the church changing and shifting, what is the one major point what you see?
I agree with Craig. I think we're in a transition time right now. We sort of had a model that we ran with, you know, the Willow Creek model back in the day, which morphed into a tractional church. And a tractional church is just good band, good speaker, good lights, good sound, and everybody is attracted to that and they come. And about 7 or 8 years ago, I started to notice attractional churches weren't growing as fast as they used to be growing. And so I started to pay attention. Then COVID hit. Then everybody was trying to get back to where they were before COVID. And now, you know, Gen Z grew up while we weren't paying attention. And they're 27 now at the eldest. And so what I think we're seeing is less produced, more passionate, less rehearsed, more authentic, less, I don't know, slick, more real. And I really like those. So those are, that's like a tonal shift or a directional shift. I think younger millennials and Gen Z are really resonating with authentic. So to pick on Craig, who's come up a lot in this podcast, if you look at Craig's preaching 8 years ago and his preaching today, he's much more vulnerable, much more open, talks about the mental health struggles he's had. And I think that kind of communication and that kind of not, he takes himself seriously, but you know, that kind of not like, look at me and I've got it all figured out, that kind of leader on a pedestal is gone and we're moving into a new era. And I think it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think community even trumps content right now, where people want this, because you can get this anywhere. You can get me answering questions, you can get you guys answering questions, you can get your content anywhere. But if the church really focuses on community, you see, 30 years ago when I started church, content was rare, community was plentiful. So it was hard to get a church message. You had to go to church or subscribe to the cassette ministry, if you remember that, right? Yeah, the cassette
that
ministry.
Before our time.
Yeah, CDs, you know, there was a CD ministry. So it was hard to get the content. Now the content is everywhere. There's so much user-generated content. The best communicators in the world, TED Talks, etc., are everywhere, and that's in every language, everywhere, every church. So content is plentiful, but what's happened in the last 20 years, community is scarce. Yes. Anxiety, depression. And so when you can elevate community, still do content well, but realize that that isn't the advantage, because when something's scarce, it has value. When something is plentiful, it has less value.
Yeah.
Right? Does it make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So I think those are the shifts, but what that looks like in 5 years, I don't know.
Yeah, I think nobody knows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's look at online ministry for a second. Yeah. And I know some of us are based in churches as volunteers, and maybe on the side you're doing being an influencer, or the online ministry is apart from your church. What have you seen? Like, how can these maybe different looking roles come together, benefit each other? And in what way do they kind of compete with their goal?
I think online provides, like social media provides a couple of opportunities, many, but for the church too. First of all, it's your new front door. The front door of the church used to be the first encounter with the church, and the front door moved online about 8 or 9 years ago, to the point where nobody, even people my age or older, We don't go anywhere or do anything without checking it out online first. We don't go to a restaurant without checking it out. We don't, you know, book a vacation without checking out all the reviews online. Nobody does that anymore, and the same is true of your church. Mm. So if you don't have a good internet presence and a good social presence, you've really got no presence, mm-hmm. because people aren't just going to show up at a private mm-hmm. club and announce themselves. They don't feel that. So it's your front door. Mm-hmm. Secondly, what's really great about having next-gen influencers like the people assembled in this room is I think it takes the next generation to talk to the next generation. What I would love to see more, because German churches are on social media, American churches are really on social media, but often to be a senior pastor, you're almost 40 years old, and a lot of them are 50 or 60, and they're trying to be the influencer on the screen, and it's not going particularly well. So I would encourage, you know, church leaders to say, mm-hmm. find a 23-year-old person who actually has an online presence on TikTok, right. and give them the camera, give them the microphone, and let them talk directly on behalf of the church. A third thing is that people follow people, not organizations. Mm-hmm. People are, you know, my name is my brand. Mm-hmm. So if I had Kerry Newhoff Communications, which is the name of my company, it would probably have 3 followers. But people will follow me. People will follow Craig Groeschel more than Life Church, although they have a lot of followers. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mike Todd rather than Transformation. Yeah. Christine Kane over Acts 21, etc. So you're in an era right now where people are following people. Mm-hmm. So if you've got those people, they can even be feeder ministries into your church while taught. You know, in the same way that a protein bar company might sponsor you as an influencer, and you're mentioning them in your reels or on your TikToks, you might talk about a church, and then people are like, oh, a church, you're cool, and you're going to a church? Like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of untapped potential there, and we're in the very early days of influencer culture mm-hmm. and trying to figure out how to mesh that with the church.
I'm thinking of the challenge with putting people on a, well, pedestal is maybe the wrong word, but putting people on a platform also. And it's not the perfect way to say it, but it could be dangerous as well,
it
like
is
for
dangerous.
The people and for the community. And the younger we are, the more we think we know it all.
Oh yeah.
But unfortunately, we don't. Sometimes we do. But like, how do we go about that to protect the influencers, maybe the young ones?
Do you have all day? Because that's a great question. So. You know, there is a generational difference there that I think is important. And like in my generation, I was born in the 60s. Normally, you didn't get famous unless you had done something. I built a big company. I invented the iPhone. Mm-hmm. I created the new lens for the camera. I built a church from zero. I'm not trying to say but you know what I mean. In the culture, it was like I did something significant. I, you know, designed the Tesla, etc. And then everybody takes notice. And what shifted about 10 years ago is that you could be an influencer simply by having a phone in your pocket and building a following. Mm-hmm. And I think that's fine, but it comes with additional hazards. So for a lot of people, even in my generation, who ended up with a big platform, if their platform grew faster than their character, they got in trouble. So you really need to make sure. Now, normally, you know, to build a church, I gave you today at the conference a short history, but I gave you 20 years of history in 5 minutes. Mm. So, you know, there were 2 decades. If I had the level, I'll just be transparent with you guys. If I had the level of being this well known in my 30s, I think I could have been roadkill. Mm. I think it could have been disastrous for me. My character wasn't developed at the point it would have gone. I'm not saying it never goes to my head. But, you know, I've had so many years off of the camera and the spotlight that being in the spotlight kind of feels like, oh, that's nice. It's a bonus. But I don't take it that seriously. And I've had so many problems that I had to overcome that I feel like my character had a chance to at least mature over the years. I think if you look at child stars, like TV stars and movie stars, who started out at 8 years old and they got a breakout role, they have really messed up adult lives. So I don't know what's gonna happen when all of a sudden you got 5 million followers and you're 18 years old. I don't know what happens to that, because the other thing about the internet, I interviewed John Crist on my podcast, the comedian, who I love, and one of the things he said a lot, we spent the day together, because we were talking about being canceled and all that. He goes, look, dude, this is what you signed up for. And you might have 5 million followers today and tomorrow be canceled. And then you have nothing and your income goes away and all of a sudden you're a has-been. That happens.
And I mean, the character is what you keep.
Yes.
And not your followers or your money or stuff like this.
Exactly.
It's like the phrase, your gift brings you on top, but your character holds you on top.
Exactly.
And I think this is dangerous what you say. It's too fast today to get famous. It's too fast to get to a point. But this morning, I could ask you on stage about this. You said we have to give the key to the next generation.
Yes.
And this would be very interesting for me. I mean, you can give fast the key and say, hey, here's the key, just do it. Do it your way. And like the older people are, okay, it's dangerous, they will mess it up. But the younger people, they want to have responsibility, they want to create something. So the transition between I give the key up to you, to the next generation, and the point where I can see they can hold the key. So it's very dangerous. And this is with influencers the same. Influencers have the key to influence people, but maybe the character is not there. So for me, it would be very interesting, how can we as leaders help younger people or influencers to be on the mountain, to go this way, to take the key and be mature in this?
So I'm going to sound like I'm contradicting what I just said, and maybe I am, so you guys decide. I'm a big fan of just giving them the keys and watching what happens. Now, that doesn't mean we're not there to support, to help, to fund, all of those things. But think about artificial intelligence. Sam Altman is 38 years old. He is changing the face of human civilization. Didn't ask permission. He's 38. Does he have the character for it? I don't know. Elon Musk doesn't think so. Elon Musk is suing him right now. Like, you look at the people who make breakthroughs and innovations. When I was 25, that was the 1 year I worked in law, and I was a student still, I was finishing up writing the bar admission course. They just threw me the keys and said, you're in court every day, go win. Didn't give me any mentoring, didn't give me any guidance. No. Well, in that moment, you figure out how to win. And I became the student and was watching, okay, this is the opposing counsel, this is what the judge needs. And what I learned early on, we could go on and on about it, but, oh, the opposing counsel is not very prepared. They're like, yes, good morning, Your Honor. I'm here on behalf of Mrs. Nina, and doesn't even know the name of their client. And it's like, oh, that's pretty easy to win. If I show up and I know the name of my client and I know the case law, and then I had to figure out, what does a judge need? What is the other person going to say? What does my client need? I won almost all my cases. I lost two in a year. But that's because they didn't like hold my hand. And I think my generation hangs on to power too long. And we assume that we're the ones who know everything. And I hear stories. I was just doing this, you know, tour across the US and different countries. So many people my age are like, well, we're going to go through a 7-year transition. Do you know nobody does that in the corporate world? Like, nobody.
Seven.
It's like 7 years. That person's going to have gray hair by the time they take over for you as the next leader.
Like, it's like the queen.
Exactly, the queen. It's like somebody has to die for this to happen. Oh, I didn't mean to be irreverent, but you know what I mean. So, yeah, Charles is 74 or 5 or whatever by the time he becomes king. And that is like, it's a great analogy, actually. That happens too often. So I'm more on the side of give young people a chance. They're changing the world. And, you know, millennials are now 43 this year. It's like, that's not young anymore. That's midlife.
Do you see a problem with influencers maybe not coming into church and using their gift inside the church, but having their own thing on TikTok or YouTube or whatever?
No, I think it's great. And I think it's a mistake for church leaders to ignore that. I think often, you know, there's so many business leaders, and I think I can tell this story because he said it. Do you know the name Patrick Lencioni? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. He sold millions of books, iconic business leader. And Pat and I were in his office in Silicon Valley a couple years ago, and he was drawing out, he's a very devout Jesus follower who is a Roman Catholic. He was like whiteboarding how to reform the papacy and the Vatican and the diocese system and showing me how he had it all in his head. And then at another meeting, I just asked Pat, I'm like, so did they take your leadership seriously in the church? He goes, no, they want me to hand out programs. So when Pat goes to church, nobody ever taps him on the shoulder and says, Patrick, can you help us figure out how to lead better? Corporations are paying him hundreds of thousands of dollars to come in and consult. He will do it for free for his local church. Nobody ever asks him. And I think we're in danger of doing the same thing with business leaders, gifted people in the community, because, you know, if you won't be an elder or you won't do this or you won't pass out programs on a Sunday morning, then you don't have a role here. And I think we would fall into the same trap with influencers. And if I was leading a church today, what I would say is, great, you're big on TikTok, excellent. Do you want to be in charge of our TikTok strategy and at least inform us and show us what we can do? Yeah. Because we don't know anything about it.
Yeah, wow, that's a good point. So let's speak about AI.
Yeah.
And I was listening to your podcast where you said, every time you have a podcast about AI, pastors skip. So I do.
You skip it too, no problem.
Because, like, I mean, we all know this story. A few years ago, 30 years ago, people said, internet is not going to work. So it's, and we all know it's a big mistake to think like this or to see this like this. So AI is coming, it's there. And the only question is, how can we work with it? How can we live with it? So church and AI, what are your thoughts on that?
It is something that pastors skip over too much. I read a stat of like a few months ago where 62% of pastors said they didn't use AI, but 62% of pastors had a strong opinion about it. It's like, how do you have a strong opinion about something you never touch? Like, that's really interesting. And of course they do touch it because they watch Netflix and, you know, they use Google Maps. All of that is artificial intelligence, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's a story of our day. It's a huge story. It's bigger probably than the internet revolution that we've been through. And I remember the internet when it was starting out. You know, I got my first email address in 1996 before most of you were born, long before you were born. And email was boring then. And it was like four messages a day and it was dial up. And then it got a little more intense. And then social media came along. But there was no video with social media. The internet couldn't really handle video. But then video came along. And by that point, we were already in the era of unintended consequences. By 2009, kids had been shaped as digital natives. And most people, I remember getting on Twitter and people just laughed, like, that's the stupidest thing ever. You just posted what you ate for lunch. That's dumb. And I'm like, well, all right, that's what you think. That's fine. And I was sharing my content on the internet. And people were like, don't you want to make people pay for it? I'm like, no, I think there's a new business model out there and it's different. So, I mean, there's a lot of misunderstanding in the early days. And now they don't run companies like mine that are internet companies where I do give 90% of my, 98% of my stuff I give away. And the 2% that people pay for funds the entire company and my staff and my team and
amazing.
All of that stuff. It's a business model that actually works, but nobody understands it in the moment. And so I think we're in that moment with AI. And I'm not saying you have to download Claude 3 or use, you know, ChatGPT or DALL-E or Midjourney or 11 Labs. I've dabbled in all of that stuff. And I'm an amateur user. I still don't think it produces the content that we can produce as humans on our own. I think it's more emotionally intelligent than a lot of people. So if you need to fire somebody, ask ChatGPT, how do I approach this situation? They're better than most pastors, I'll tell you that. You know, so I think there's a lot of things it can do. And there are companies that now you just upload your YouTube video, your sermon, and it produces really, really good study resources with the click of a button. All of that is happening. But I think the much deeper issues are existential. They're philosophical. You know, when you get to the point of singularity, where we truly are, we definitely passed the Turing test, where AI is, you can't tell whether that was a human or whether that was AI. Mm-hmm. Have you seen Sora, the new OpenAI video? It's text to video. It's freaky, man. That video looks so real. They haven't released it to the public yet, but you're like, that's beautifully shot 4K or 8K footage.
Wow. Mm-mm.
All digitally created and way beyond any CG Hollywood mm-hmm. stuff you've ever seen. Wow. So we're gonna get into a deep fake era. We're gonna get into AI, like where were we? We were at our hotel this morning, just across the street, and there's a little robot wandering around, picking up dirty dishes and that kind of stuff. And it's kind of innocuous and looks like a toy. But you can have AI companions now that they can be virtual or they can be real. 60% of people who use those for sexual relationships. So at this point, you know, if you have an AI wife who never lets you down, knows exactly what to say, never has a bad day, knows how to stroke your ego, says those push-ups were awesome when they weren't, you know, and all those things, you will probably fall more in love with your AI partner than your real life partner. And what do you do when your 13-year-old says, I'm in love with an AI? Yeah. I have a girlfriend and she's an AI. Those are all real 2024 scenarios. And we've got our head in the sand. The amount of theology and philosophy that those questions, transhumanism, you know, like you look at what all the billionaires are doing, they're trying to live forever right now. And why are they trying to live forever? Because they have a gazillion dollars and there's nothing left to conquer. So now, you know, they bought up Hawaii, they bought up all these islands, and now they're like, how do I live forever? It's really interesting because God isn't in the equation. And if the theologians stick their head in the sand and we just ignore it, we now have this theological vacuum. Anybody in Silicon Valley will tell you we have a philosophical vacuum, but we have a theological vacuum now that theologians aren't ready to fill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what do we do? And then Neuralink, you know, the very first human-computer connection happened in the last few months. Elon Musk's company, Neuralink, implanted a chip in the brain of a human test specimen, and he can now operate a mouse with his thoughts. And it's soon going to be almost like a human machine. What's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, I only speak one language and I forgot the word. But it's some kind of human robot synthesis.
Yeah. Maybe
humanoid.
This could help us with the volunteer crisis.
Yeah, the volunteer crisis. Just get some bots.
New welcome team at White Church in Frankfurt. So just robots.
But you know, there's really good applications too. Like in Japan, they're exploring AI companions for lonely seniors who don't have family around them.
Yeah.
So I mean,
why
it
not?
Can be really good. Why not?
Yeah.
But it's also got like what we know what social media did to anxiety, depression, and all of that.
Yeah.
So what are AI relationships going to do to the human psyche? Because we were designed by God a certain way.
Yeah.
And so there's this huge deal. I did a 4-part series.
Yeah.
And my criteria for the guests were they had to be well-rounded in theology, well-rounded in AI, well-rounded in philosophy. I wanted all three. I asked for months all over the world, I found finally 4 people who were 3 for 3, but it was really hard.
Right.
And I'm like, ooh, this is not good. Mm-hmm. This is not good. So if you're looking for something to study, do your philosophical, theological homework, and start addressing the void of that in tech.
Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, you're so welcome. Boy, that went fast.
And very fast, but so helpful, so good content. And thank you for coming in this room, and thank you very much for listening to us. And have a good flight.
Thank you.
Home to Toronto, where Suits is.
Suits was filmed.
Yeah, filmed.
I got a picture.
Not in New York.
No, it wasn't. It was done all in Toronto. And I have a picture of me and my son somewhere on my phone in the Suits lobby when they were still filming it. Yeah, but it was always filming around Toronto. So that was fun. Never saw an actual shoot. But the building, if you're ever there, is the Bay Adelaide Center. And it's probably now that it's gone viral again, they've probably got it all blocked off. But it's the Bay Adelaide Center. It's just a law finance tower in downtown Toronto. And I think my wife, she did her law in that building back in the day.
Thank you, Kerry.
Thank you.
Have a good flight. God bless you.
Okay, thank you both
very
much.